Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Pav.
And I'm Neil.
And welcome to the Top 10 of Anything podcast.
Let's start the countdown.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Fire away with your number 10.
Okay, so I've gone quite popular with my number 10, but I've gone for Avengers Infinity War for number 10. Because I just think that the culmination of 10 years of movies building up to this purple bloke that we're going to see for like 10 years, and it's hinted and hinted and hinted, and it could have easily have gone so wrong, and there was so much weight of expectation on it, and all of a sudden not only is it so good and they pitch it so well, and I love the fact that it cuts in and it doesn't even show how he subdues Thor and how he kills half the crew. He's already done it, and it's like, yeah, it's no sweat. And it just absolutely nails the tone for those two movies, I think, and they tie up the Marvel franchise, or at least phase, however many phases it is, for that. Just so really, really well. It's really well done, and so many deaths. It's like Heimdall dies, Loki dies, like, you know, Thor's basically dead, pretty much, but floating through space. And I just think it just absolutely nails the start of that end of the end of that sort of sequence of movies, basically. I think it's such an important opening scene, and it gets it absolutely bang on, I think.
Yeah, that is a good one. I mean, again, Ross, you're not an action fan, so I'm assuming you don't watch a lot of Marvel movies.
No, sadly. This is going to be like the 90s song one.
I've got some more grown-up ones later on, so that's fine, Ross.
Well, I do agree with you. The one thing about that is that although Marvel is criticised a little bit for like killing people off, but they're never really dead.
Yeah.
But you thought, oh my God, like I said, Heimdall, whatever his name, Heimdall, what's his name?
I think it's Heimdall.
Dies, and again, I must say, stressed, there may be spoilers. We might be talking like spoilers in these moments. And then Loki dies, and you think, okay, all right, well, the two people are gone. Anybody could die, really.
Well, that's just it. It actually, for a superhero franchise where everybody's safe and everybody survives, all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, this it's not going to go like this in this end bit. There is going to be deaths, and obviously, spoilers, Vision dies in it, and he doesn't come back. Well, maybe he comes back in the series, but comes back with a little sort of asterisk next to his head. But and then there's the fight with the Hulk where he just totally brushes him to one side. You're like, oh, okay, right. Yeah. So there really is, the stakes are pretty high here. So I just think it's great, and I'm a bit of a Marvel head on those first phase of movies anyway.
I am, absolutely, completely agree. That's a great one to kick us off with. Go on then, Ross, your number 10.
My number 10 is Scream, which is probably really lame.
No, the original Scream, yeah.
The original Scream, yeah. I just like the way it was set out. Drew cooking popcorn, and I think just the invasion into the home. I've always, horror films, for example, I always get more affected by them if I think this could actually happen. So if it's something like Paranormal Activity, for example, where you have the CCTV in the corner of the bedroom, that was worse than some person being possessed in some different kind of setting, because it's something that you could be sleeping and having a camera running, and I'd be scared to look at what was on there afterwards. So Scream with a back door and a front door and a killer, that I think it just grabbed me. So, and it's got some classic lines, you know, the conversation with Sydney on the phone.
You couldn't really hear it.
That was the first one. Sorry, Rick, go on.
Sorry, no, go on.
No, I was going to say that was the first little drop that I played that you couldn't really hear. yeah, it wasn't very loud. Look.
What's your favourite scary movie?
You can stop right there. There you go. That was the first one.
Ah, there we are.
So go on, Rick, you were saying?
I was just saying that I love the little switch and bait where is it Drew Barrymore? And you think, oh, she's a star. And then she just gets killed straight away. And again, it sets the stakes. And you think, oh, okay, right.
Because it was someone that you recognised. Yeah. You thought, oh, she's the star of the show. Oh, Jesus Christ, she's just been butchered. Oh, no. Yeah, it completely throws you off. Yeah, yeah. I remember going to see that at the cinema and constantly, all the way through the movie, going, that's the killer. That's the killer. Oh, no, that one. No, they've just been killed. That's the killer. And trying double guessing it all the way through and then not getting it at the end. It's a great film.
Yeah.
Absolutely great film. Okay, my number 10 is something very similar to Scream. It's La La Land. So it's the opening in La La Land. I don't know if either of you guys have seen La La Land at all.
Yeah, I've never seen it. No, I've just passed me by.
No.
This is
the guy with Love Actually, with The Notebook guy, isn't it?
That's it. That's exactly what it says on the poster from The Notebook guy. It says on there. Yeah, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone.
Yeah.
But it's like the opening is it's the express. Actually, it's the same expressway they used in Speed. You know when the bus jumps over. Oh, it's that part of the LA freeway. And all the cars are stopped and everybody gets out and there's a big song and dance number and it's colourful and it's like old Hollywood. It is fantastic. It's a really good song. Can't remember what the song is. But it really sets up the story. But it's just like it's got some great choreography in it. Like I say, it's lovely and colourful. It's a beautiful sunny LA day. With just like this gridlock on the freeway, but everybody just gets up and starts dancing on the top of their cars. It's fantastic. It's a really good film as well. I don't know if you like musicals or not, but Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are fantastic in it.
So yeah, I've heard really, really good things about it, actually. And it is one of those ones that I'm not a massive musical sort of fan, but I mean, I will watch them, you know, I'll sit down and watch them, but I have heard that in particular is actually brilliant. So I really do need to get myself in gear and see that.
I would thoroughly recommend it. Ollie, you're number 9 then, please.
Right, I'm hoping you two will appreciate this one. As we spoke a bit about snooker the last time I was on.
That's right, yes,
we did. And although I did say at the start I wasn't going to include any kind of like American sports because they're a bit too niche, I suppose snooker is as niche as it can get, particularly in and around Europe. However, I've gone for Ronnie O'Sullivan's 5:08.147 in 1997.
That is my number 5.
That's my number 8.
How weird is that? How bizarre?
There you go.
I thought I had a feeling you might have that in, but again, he still holds the record as well. So, yeah, that's why. And I kind of put it.
He's had 15 maximum breaks in his career.
Has he?
Yeah.
Wow.
I had to look it up because I thought, well, how's this going? You know, and because we remember when he did it, it was just astounding. But then I have to find out he's done 15 of them professionally as well. And then in an interview after the last snooker tournament, when they were talking to him about him, he said, I don't really bother playing for them now. So how many more do you think he could do?
Oh, that's the thing. I don't know, he's just immensely talented.
Yeah.
But it was that point for me where it elevated the sport to a mainstream audience when, was it Barry Hearn bought the rights?
The
wheels were in motion, it all kind of clicked in and he became a figurehead for the sport and he took it to new levels, to new eras.
He makes the game look so easy. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, I watched that 5:147. I think he played the last 4 or 5 shots without any chalk because he dropped his chalk.
Yeah.
Because at the end of it, when he pots the black, he's looking at someone in the crowd, sort of going, "Chalk, can you get me some chalk?" Because he'd lost his chalk. And then I watched another 147 that he did, where he was playing right-handed and left-handed, like shot after shot, and he just and it ends up where he's taking the piss because he will do shots that are absolutely ridiculous, but he'll do them left-handed just to really make it look like he's really taking the piss. And I think one time, didn't he get a 146? Because the 147, the money for it was like 30,000. So he thought, I'm not going to bother. So he did a 146 instead of a 147 just to take the piss.
And then go on. Sorry, Ollie.
I just wonder if he'd done it on purpose because he knew he'd get more revenue on his YouTube channel. Like
more than likely. Viral clip. More than likely. I mean, but that's the thing. He's a guy that sort of has transcended the sport now. He knows that if he really wants to try, he could probably win every game he wants to. He just doesn't need to try that much.
But then he goes into tournaments and you think, oh, he's on it. He'll play one game and he's fantastic. And then the next game he's lost 7-0.
But then I think that's where he just woke up and thought, I'm not really feeling this today.
Yeah, but as he says in interviews, it depends how his mind is that day.
Yeah.
You know, because he's openly talked about his mental health. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I still remember that moment when he was playing VR Paul. On that documentary, and he went to go and rest on the table and just fell flat on his face. I mean, I'll put that in the video playlist for the Patreon supporters. But that's a good one. Look at that, all three of us have got that one. Lovely. Okay, go on then, Neil. You're number nine.
So it is quite a big one for England. It's England winning the 66 World Cup. I couldn't not put it in there. I almost was reluctant not to, but it was a defining moment for the English winning English team. It's been a long time, and I don't honestly think we'll ever win it again, but there we go. But what else to say? You know, they think it's all over and all of that jazz. It's been talked about a million times, but I thought I couldn't miss it out, really.
Okay. And in both of your opinions, was it a goal? Did it go over the line?
Well, either way, we scored four and then they scored two. So, true. It made my honourable mentions. The only reason I didn't put it in was obviously it's before my time, but I just have no kind of, I can't relate to it.
No.
Right.
That makes sense. So my closest I've seen, again, I was a kid in the 90s, 96, getting to the semis, 2018.
Yeah.
And the last World Cup in the Euros, I guess. I've met Sir Jeff Hurst.
Yeah,
been fortunate to meet him. I think you're right. I think it is definitely an iconic moment. I think if you were going to choose a moment for me, it would be the commentary line. There's people on the pitch, they think it's all over. But yeah, it didn't quite get in the top 10 for me.
No. It might be more relevant to myself and Pab because of our age. Because I mean, so you were 4 years off, 3 years off of it being born, weren't you? And I was sort of like 5 years or whatever off of it. So, you know, we had our parents and our parents' friends and our friends' parents and things like that always talking about it from a young age. So it was always ingrained into us. And I just felt I had to put it in there.
Really. Yeah, I think what helps it live on is the Baddiel and Skinner Three Lions, because music video for that makes direct parallels between the 90s squad and the 60s squad, and that song's immortalised in football folklore, isn't it? So I think you're probably right to put it in the top 10.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you can imagine this, well, it wasn't summer, was it? In the winter for the World Cup, Jeff Hurst really pissed off with Kylian Mbappe because he's now not the only one to score a hat-trick in a World Cup final. I bet he was so pissed. He just really didn't like that at all.
He didn't win it though, did he? So I think he's still got that.
That is true, absolutely. Okay, my number nine, Ollie. I'm sorry. Okay,
it's not that one.
No, my number nine is Firmino scores number seven versus Man United in the Premier League 2023. I had to put that one on there just because it was at that point. I think there was still like 10 minutes to go and I thought this could be crazy. Okay. Ollie, come on, snap out of it.
No, you didn't. Top 10 sports events of all time. You put that in.
Oh, come on. It's Liverpool versus Manchester United, our number one foes, and we have beaten them 7-0. If it had been the other way around, you're not telling me that would be in your top 10.
No, I'd probably put one of the many trophies we've won over the last 3 years. But is that honestly your number nine?
That is honestly my number nine.
I'm in shock.
That is honestly my number nine. it's because, and it's just, it's that specific moment because, well, I think actually when number six went in, then I think there was like 15, 18 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And I thought...
Here's the thing. If had we won the league and we beat, and Man United beat Liverpool 7-0, then it might get into the top 10. But to do 7-0 and then get beaten by Bournemouth the week after, I don't know.
Don't you're spoil my number
right.
eight.
You're absolutely no, you're absolutely right. But I'm talking, if we're talking about like individual sporting moments,
the rivalry
for me, the rivalry, you can have your Man Cities and you can have your Evertons and you can have your Arsenals. Liverpool Man United is the game. I wouldn't say so much that I don't mind not winning anything all season, as long as we say beat United twice. Maybe not go that far, but to have that, I mean, seven is the score where on the Vidi printer it will say 7 open brackets SEVEN closed brackets, because nobody should be, no professional football club should beat another professional football club by 7 goals. It just shouldn't, and especially when United have been playing so well this season. And I will say it, I feel dirty and I'm going to need a shower after saying that and wash my mouth out, but it was just that moment that, and again, it flattered to deceive, because I think the week before, didn't we lose? We lost 5-2 to Real Madrid. The week after, we lose 1-0 to Bournemouth. So in the grand scheme of things, it's nothing to shout about. But that 90 minutes and that specific moment, it's just in, I mean, look, give it, if 10 years' time, it probably wouldn't be in my top 10. But as we're talking now... And I apologise, Ollie. I don't mean it to be. Yeah, it just happens to be that you're a United fan. It would have been, if anyone else had been there, it would have been the same. I didn't put it in there specifically because it's you. And he doesn't.
Aguero!
He doesn't believe a word I say.
Although you've just reminded me of the... I completely forgot about this until you just mentioned the Germany 7, Brazil 1.
Yeah.
That was... I've not got it in my top 10, but that was shocking as well because that was in the World Cup. It was in Brazil's backyard. In the World Cup in Brazil as well.
Yeah. Mm.
And I remember where I was fondly watching that. And you said the 7 goals comes down like a video printer. It's like, it was like watching the credits at the end of the film. Like,
exactly.
Podolski, Thomas Müller. Yeah. Man.
And those Brazilian players looked genuinely broken after that, didn't they? They just they didn't know where to go, what to do. And it's, you know, but there you go. Okay, then, Kendra, your number 8, please.
Okay, my number 8, I'm going to go with RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 2, Episode 5. I know there's a UK version of Drag Race.
I can say I have seen a lot of the American series as well. Not that I'm choosing to sit and watch it. My daughter is the biggest fan, so I might well have seen this, but without knowing.
If not, you need to go show her this one after. So, how old's your daughter?
23.
Okay, she'll know what this one is.
Yeah.
So it was the whole, I watched it, I got hooked on Drag Race during, while I was actually splitting up from my, I was leaving a really, really bad relationship and I just needed some happy, go lucky, super easy to watch. I went through all the seasons and it's just so, it's just the best. So season 2 of All Stars, right? All the best of the best come back, cream of the crop. But what they did was, instead of typically on Drag Race, there's a lip sync for your life. If you're up for elimination, there's two queens, and they got to lip sync the same song. And whoever really wants to win is the one who wins. Season 2, they flipped it though, and it was lip sync for your legacy. So it was the top two, and whoever lip synced actually won $10,000, and they were like the winner for the week. It is between Alyssa Edwards. I don't know if you know that name, Neil. She's the one who goes like that all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, she tongue clicks all the time. And Tatiana, who is just, they're both gorgeous. They have legs for days. They come out and it's to Rihanna's Shut Up and Drive. And you watch them and everybody's mind is blown. It's just something you can watch and I immediately still get happy. I hear that song and it immediately brings me back to watching it for the first time. And it's just joy. It's so joyful and it's good. It was very entertaining. Alyssa's ridiculous. Tatiana was amazing. One of the best ones. in my opinion, of all of Drag Race.
There's some real talent on that Drag Race. I mean, like I said, I've only dipped in and out. The one I remember and stunning to look at was the one, is it Britney Spears? The Britney Spears? Oh,
Derek Barry.
Bloody hell.
Oh, yeah, he looks like her.
He looked just like her, genuinely, pal.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right, okay.
So it's a drag act to be like her, Britney Spears, oh, yeah. But he genuinely looked just like her.
And what did you say the name was, Kendra?
So this is season 2, episode 5.
Okay.
And it's the one with the lip sync for your legacy with Alyssa Edwards and Tatiana.
Okay, Tatiana, okay. I'll make sure that goes on the video playlist, and I'll also put the Britney Spears one on there as well. I mean, it sounds like that's intriguing. I've never seen any of that. I mean, I don't think anybody. I think my kids might watch it, but again, they're early 20s, so they love it. Hey, up, Waffles is off again.
What was his choice? What was that? Scooby Doo. Which episode of Scooby Doo?
Okay, thank you, Kendra. Neil, you're number 8, please.
Is Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm a huge fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm, but there's one episode that still to this day, if I'm feeling glum, will make me laugh. It's series 1, episode 8, and it's Beloved Aunt. If you've seen it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It is typical Larry David. It is so, so funny. I'm not going to say the word on here because it's more offensive in England than it is in the US. But yeah, it was hilarious.
I thought this might be on your list. I must admit.
That one episode is all. I don't think they've ever achieved quite. I mean, some of them are pure comedy gold, but this is just pure comedy genius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That will go on the video playlist. There is, as much as I said, we don't want to spoil anything. If you've never seen
that one,
Curb Your Enthusiasm, that's the episode I think you should watch.
Yeah,
definitely.
Have you watched it, Kendra?
I've watched some of them, not all of them. I think it's been the ones that my mom tells me, like, this is what you should watch kind of thing.
Right.
But Larry David humor isn't always for me.
No, it's uncomfortable humor, and I get why people don't. Myself and Pab are very, very, we love uncomfortable humor sometimes.
Oh, no. It's just one of those things.
I'm in the corner. I get embarrassed for other people constantly. So. I'm not.
You know, the times we've done live shows back here years ago, and we'd leave the longest, most uncomfortable pauses where we find it funny, but nobody else does.
Yeah, yeah.
And that makes it even funnier for us.
Yeah, and then we just can't carry on. It's just the way it is. Okay, my number 8. Now, this is cheating a little bit because this isn't part of a series. This was a one-off special. At the weekend, I watched the Baz Luhrmann Elvis movie.
Oh, I watched that as well.
Did you? And I thought it was fantastic. And I've been on this deep dive of watching like Elvis live from, you know, Aloha Elvis and all that, just to watch him, just to see him through different eyes now. I found the end of the movie really, really sad.
Mm.
That final sort of clip of him singing Unchained Melody at the piano was just so sad. But last night on YouTube, they've got the hot, I put it on the video playlist, the 68 comeback special.
Which is fantastic.
And I'd never seen it all the way through. Just seen like the iconic bits, you know, If I Can Dream. But that's going to be my number 8, because after watching it yesterday, I've always said that Elvis for me is my man crush. And Elvis in his leather, in the full black leather jacket and leather trousers, I don't think I've ever seen a sexier man.
Did you get stirrings, Pav?
I just kept looking at him, and I was looking at like the girls, because he's there, whether he's sat playing his guitar, he's stood in the middle of that tiny little stage with all these people around him. And you can see the women are just melting around him, because I'm assuming they can't believe that they're that close to him and watching him do his stuff. But I don't think I've seen any performer like that before. As much as you can have your Freddie Mercury's and your George Michael's and even Michael Jackson and Prince, I don't think there's anybody. I mean, he was the blueprint for all of those to be a performer that just, I don't know whether you want to ooze sexiness. He had everything, absolutely everything. And even to the point after I watched that, I ended up watching, I think it was the 77, it was in June 77, so it would have been a couple of months before he died, and he'd obviously packed on a few pounds. The voice was still just like absolutely top notch. You couldn't fault him at all. And I think watching a film like Elvis, I don't know how much of it is absolutely true and how much of it is just made up, like a lot of these biopics are, but it just makes you realize that the guy was a human being behind the whole "this is Elvis" image. And as much as I really enjoyed watching the whole, I think it was about 58 minutes. And did you know, especially you, Neil, the guy that directed that directed the Star Wars Holiday Special?
I didn't know that. Was
I didn't believe that when I found that.
Glory to such doom.
I know.
I was going to say, isn't that notoriously bad?
It is notoriously bad. It is bad. It is more.
Even Star Wars fans say it's bad.
Yeah. George Lucas wanted to buy every copy of it and destroy it, to completely wipe it from the face of the earth. And I think it started to come round now that it's so bad that people like it a little bit.
But it is, now it's fun kind of thing.
Very, very bad. If you ever get it, again, I think you can watch it on YouTube.
I'm sure it's
not
on YouTube.
I am not going to put that on the video playlist. I'm just not.
You're not. You're a nice person.
So it is, like I say, it is cheating a little bit, but the Elvis Comeback Special 68 is my number 8. Go on then, Don, what are we on? Your number 7, please.
Okay, number 7 is Tribute by Tenacious D.
Oh, that's my number 3.
Oh.
I really like this song. I love Tenacious D anyway, but this one's always a bona fide classic. I mean, I do love, obviously, the others, but I'm with you, Donald.
And it really is the song that put them on the map.
Mm.
Yeah, great video as well.
Dave Grohl as the devil. Ben Stiller crops up in it. I mean, Jack Black has got such a great voice anyway.
He's
a
great performer, isn't he? I know. I've never been fortunate enough to see them live, because they do sell out quick. But I know people that have seen them live and say they put on a spectacular 2-hour show.
There's some great full videos of their live shows on YouTube, and they've got some great...
I enjoyed the movie, but I don't know. It's too long, if you know what I mean. The movie, The Pick of Destiny, but the songs, Fucker Gently's probably the other classic, isn't it?
Which what number did you say that was? Number 3 for you, Neil?
Yeah, it's really high up for me.
I mean, the one that he played during the beginning there, Kickapoo, was the fact that they got Ronnie James Dio.
Yeah.
Before he died for that part.
And in the video, Meatloaf was in the video.
Yeah.
That part of the movie, wasn't it? And that young little kid that looked like a young Jack Black.
I know. Was amazing.
He was.
Was amazing. Very good. That's a good one, Donald. Go on then, Neil. Your number 7, please.
So this is because I got high, Afro Man. Well, have you?
Usually around 4:20.
But if you actually listen to it, it's a great song underneath it all. But it was a great day in the UK when that got to number one. Because weed here, Donald, is totally illegal. You can't get weed at all. It's frowned upon by everybody. We're probably living in the 16th century compared to the 21st century of the rest of the world. But, you know, it was just great that sort of song got to number one here, and they were playing it on all the main airwaves. And they can't have been that stupid to know what it was about.
Right?
But it got passed and it got through.
But it was also part of the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
It was it. I mean, it? Kevin Smith did the video. It was from the movie. But
so there you go. I mean, there's your biggest thing to show you. It's about weed. If Kevin Smith's involved, I mean,
but I don't believe he was actually taking weed back then. He speaks about it. It was when he met Seth Rogen, wasn't it, that he got very much into his weed.
That would have been with Zach and Miri Make a Porno. That was before.
No, I thought that was after, wasn't it?
Was it? Oh, I don't know. We'll have to check
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back must have been about 2001, 2002, maybe.
I was.
Because I always forget there's a very young Will Ferrell in that movie.
There was.
Yeah. Yes. Always
was.
Forget
that. That was, yeah, that was full of stars, that was, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, my number seven, you have to have Monty Python. So my favourite, which is probably not one that a lot of people would think of, is Eric the Half Bee.
Oh,
that's my favourite Monty Python song. but they've got loads of great songs. I mean, you could do a top 10 comedy songs for Monty Python.
Just
Monty, without a doubt. But I love the fact, because it's like a lot of their songs were part of sketches that were in, like on the records or on the. So that
this was a record, wasn't it? This one.
This was a record. Yeah, because this is where he was going for a dog license, wasn't he? No, it wasn't. He was going for a fish license. That's right. And then he told the story of Eric the Half.
Was it somebody like King Edward VIII had a pet prawn called Simon? But it's the bit in this song where I always get stuck in my head, and it's going to happen now. Cyril Connolly.
Which, to me, is typical Monty Python. It's got it doesn't make sense. There's no need for it to be there.
But and it's quite a rare one, because John Cleese is singing.
He is.
He didn't do a lot of singing.
Very rarely. Yeah, mainly because he can't really sing. So, Michaela, you're number six, please.
This isn't going to surprise you. Grange Hill.
Oh.
Well, that's my number two.
Is it?
I was a huge Grange Hill fan.
Yeah, I love Grange Hill. That was quite groundbreaking, I think, for the time. I don't think there was any other sort of... there was no sort of TV shows like that, whereby, you know, it was all about, you know, school life and various friendship groups and kind of what went on within school. I think it was probably the only one then, wasn't it? But they covered a lot of ground, actually. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I used to be glued to it. That was a highlight when I got home.
Same as you, Michaela. I absolutely have ever so fond memories of it.
Yeah.
And it was only a few years ago that I watched a few of the Tucker episodes.
Yeah, Tucker's Luck, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then that was the spin-off, wasn't it?
Tucker's Luck
with Alan
Jenkins.
Yeah,
well, I had a bit of a crush on him as well.
He was the bad boy, though, really.
He was the bad boy. That's probably why the crush was there.
Yeah. But they dealt with so many topics that probably wouldn't be allowed today. I mean, you think about the affair with the teacher, they probably wouldn't be allowed to show that.
That's right.
Claire,
it was the whole drugs,
heroin, and all
that. Just say no.
That's right.
Yeah.
Zamo.
Yeah.
Zamo.
And they dealt with racism right back there. Yeah. They really did.
They did. It was pretty groundbreaking, I think, to be honest.
I think so.
There was nothing like it.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, it sort of filtered out, didn't it, into people's lives outside of school. You know,
they were
pupils.
Finished in 2008.
Did it really?
That's crazy, isn't it?
Gosh, because it must have started in the 70s. I don't know.
1978
when
it started.
Was it 78?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I sort of gave up, obviously, when I left, probably well before I left school.
Yeah,
but my years were basically Tucker and whoever followed. Saw a bit of the Zamo years and all of
that. Yeah, me too. That was probably when I checked out soon after that. Yeah. But
I'm actually friends on Facebook with Zamo.
Oh, wow.
And also Paula Ann Bland, who was she had like the blonde curly hair that was one of the girls in Grange Hill.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We're such good friends.
Get you name dropping.
No, we're not really. But that is a good one. That is a good one. I don't know. It would have been, if we'd have done the top 15 or top 20, I think it would have been made my list, but it just didn't make my 10. No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my number six is Run Around with
Mike Reed.
Not the DJ Mike Reed, but the Ebony Allnight comedian Mike Reed. Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't know how old Mike Reed was when he did that, but he still always looks really old. Yeah, he always looked really old. But always had, like, you would have a tracksuit on or something. And the idea of Run Around was you'd have a question that had two answers. And the children, I don't know how many children, it would be 20 or whatever. He would ask the question, then he would go, "Run Around, nah!" And then they would stand on whichever answer they thought was right.
Yes.
Whoever got it right, and they had a chance to choose to change their mind if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And then whoever got it right stayed in, and whoever got it wrong, I think they ended up in a cage or something, didn't they, I think?
Something like that, yeah. Something like that.
Until there was one person.
Gosh, I'd forgotten about that.
Until there was one person left. But also, they would have a musical guest on every week.
Yeah.
And I can remember that was the first time I ever saw Pet Shop Boys. They were on there doing West End Girls. And I always remember that because I used to get Smash Hits, the magazine.
Yes.
And Neil Tennant was the editor of Smash Hits at the time.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, he was on there, like, he wasn't just being a journalist, he was actually being a pop star. And it was the very first time, I think the first time West End Girls came out, it wasn't a hit, was it? They had to re-release
it. Yeah, they redid it, didn't they?
Yeah. So, but whether it was West End Girls or Opportunities, Let's Make Lots of Money, I can't remember which song it was. But yeah, it was another way to get a little bit of a fix of music, because they would just stick a music act in there. I remember seeing, I was doing some, again, research, and I can't remember, Graduate is the name of the band, and it was the band before Tears for Fears. Right. So it had, Kurt Smith and Roland Orzabal in these like mod suits, singing this quite sort of jaunty little ditty, really, but it was, they had a lot of attitude on their face, which is, I'll put that in the video playlist for our Patreon subscribers.
How cool.
But yeah, so it's, I loved that show. I thought it was so much fun.
But it sort of went through a spell in children's in UK children's TV of these little quizzes or game shows, didn't it? That was suddenly all came out. Because do you remember On Safari with Christopher Biggins?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Ian Tailforth.
Tailforth was
the host.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
On Safari.
Oh, my word. That is so cool. I've forgotten about that.
There you go.
Awesome.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Back to the work in hand. Anna, you're number five, please.
I don't even know if you would know them, but it's going to be on your playlist, Pav.
Okay.
The Doobie Brothers.
Oh, the Doobie Brothers, yeah.
So the Doobie Brothers, we were able to catch them with Chicago at Red Rocks in 2019. Right. Now, I grew up on the Doobie Brothers, Grant, you know, my parents' music kind of thing, and just transitioned to me. But, oh, what a trip. I mean, it's only, I think, four of the original members. But it was like you're spending the night with four of your coolest uncles. It was awesome.
Isn't that Michael McDonald?
Four of your coolest pot-smoking uncles.
What's that? Isn't that Michael McDonald was one of the Doobie Brothers?
Yeah.
Doobie Brothers and Chicago. He wasn't there.
Yeah, it was. Well, and it was only Peter Cetera and I don't remember the other guy. So it was like two. Like, okay, it's not Chicago. You've got two, but right. Okay.
It was the shit out of Chicago.
Well, and
And Chicago was the main act, but I was like, two songs in, I'm like, I'm good to go. I saw the Doobie Brothers. I need nothing else. Life is good.
Yeah.
Fair play. And that was 2019 as well.
Yeah, yeah. They're still doing it.
Nice. Very good. Go on then, Neil. You're number five.
So this is Marillion. I don't know whether Anna would know this band very much. They're Anna's a prog rock band from the 80s. I'm going the Fish era. Fish was the lead singer. 21st of December, 1987, NEC, Birmingham, again. Now, I'd seen Marillion before at a local city to us at the Gloucester Leisure Centre a couple of years before. But I chose this one because this was when they were at the top of their game. They were playing the big arenas. So they were playing your Wembleys, your Birminghams and that. It was fantastic. It Bites supported. Do you remember It Bites?
I do remember
supported
all It the Bites. Heroes. And yeah, all yeah.
They weren't very good live. Really weren't very good live. But Marillion were fantastic, but on a hell of a show. But another reason was because I wasn't quite 18. We had to be accompanied by an adult back then. And my mum liked the music. So she decided she would take us and sit there. So we all descended to the stage. She was left holding the bags, the T-shirts or whatever on this row, completely on her own. We weren't far from the stage. And the lead singer dedicated a song to my mum, which was quite... I mean, I was annoyed at the time because I was a huge fan. I wanted him to dedicate it to me. But it was, the more I think about it, it was really sweet that my mum had a song dedicated to her in the middle of this huge arena. So,
was that Fish era?
Yeah,
Fish
very much
dedicated
so.
Dedicated a song to your mum?
Yeah.
Which song?
And funnily enough, now that I sort of... I mean, I still follow the guy. I've seen the guy live every time he does a tour and everything. And we've actually chatted. I've met the guy. You know, I've even had a pint of beer with him. So it's bizarre.
Which song did he dedicate to his mum, to your mum?
Sugar Mice.
Oh,
not dedicated, but he said, you know, there it is. I wouldn't say, oh, this is to you like that.
Yeah.
But the way he said it and pointed her out, it was really sweet.
Oh, bless.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sang to my mum.
That can't be bad. Okay, my number five, a bit of a cheat. I haven't actually got a specific gig for this one, but I've seen him so many times, Billy Joel. I'm going to choose, actually, the Stormfront. I think I saw him twice on that tour. He's just an amazing singer live. He's he doesn't use the fact that he's restricted behind a piano to entertain the crowd. And the one thing I will say, that fact that you said about the fact that the front two rows,
yeah,
my two cousins went and saw him, and that exact thing happened.
Oh, really?
One of the security guards came to them and said, you need to come with me, thinking that they'd done something wrong, took them from like the back block to like the second row, and
wow,
they were just they thought this is mental,
yeah,
this is crazy. And that was obviously part of what you were talking about, the fact that he likes to have proper fans in those front two rows. But yeah, he played Wembley Stadium, I think last year or the year, might have been last year, because it would have been COVID the year before, wouldn't it? I think maybe.
Yeah. Well, he's back in London this summer.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's at Hyde Park.
Is he? Oh, yeah. That's too big. How can you enjoy that? That's too
well,
many
I'll
people.
Tell you how later on.
Okay. All right, then. But that's my number five. Right, so, Skype, Babe was your number four. So, Neil, we're on to your number four, please.
So it's a Muppet, and it was a toss-up between two, but I have gone for Kermit the Frog because he is probably the most iconic Muppet out of them all. I nearly went for Animal, so looking forward to that new Muppet Mayhem TV series that's coming out. It looks amazingly funny. But, I mean, what's not to love? He's the man, he's the leader of the Muppets, really, isn't he, Kermit? I mean, if you think about Muppets, it's Kermit. I loved when they brought the Muppet movies back, you know, as in with Jason Segel putting that first Muppet movie there. I think it's with great songs, great songs.
Brett from Flight of the Conchords, I think, did those, didn't he?
He did. He did do those. I think we mentioned it on a previous episode.
I really love that movie.
Yeah, so do I. I still think it holds up. So the original Muppet movie and then that one being the icon, the sort of the go-to best ones. But the rest still have their place and have their, you know, amusing things. Because we've got the Muppet Christmas Carol, which I think is probably one of the greatest Muppet Christmas movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really like Treasure Island, Muppet's Treasure Island.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't scared to kill Billy Connolly off in that, were they, quickly?
Spoilers, I've never seen it.
Have you not?
No, I haven't. Well, I know one thing that happens now.
Yeah. Mm. I still find it very funny because you've got Tim Curry in that as the chief pirate. So, you know, if you're like me and you're a fan of Tim Curry, you're going to be in heaven to see him hamming up the place as a pirate. We always wanted that. But yeah, and Kermit's always just funny. He has some funny moments. And we must not forget the Kermit nod after every time he sings or speaks.
Yep.
You know, we all do it. Pav's doing it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're timeless, aren't they? It's like, it doesn't matter. It never ages.
Tell me you've seen the trailer to The Muppet Mayhem.
Who?
You, Pav.
No, I haven't yet, no.
Honestly, it looks really, really good.
Is it a new movie or is it a TV series?
TV series. Original TV series.
Disney Plus.
Yeah, Disney Plus.
Well, do y'all do Disney Plus or do you have to do a different thing? I don't even
know. No,
we got Disney Plus.
Oh, I imagine you do to watch Mandalorian.
Yeah.
We got the second one.
Okay.
Just a bit late getting it compared to you. That was all.
Yeah. We'll add that onto the list then. Okay. It's Muppet Mayhem, is it?
Yeah, it comes out in May. It's even got our friend Kevin Smith in it.
Has it really?
Yeah, he plays a movie director. He's in it. Okay. It's got a lot of famous people in it.
Okay.
And it's all about the band. Just so you know, it's not like Miss Piggy and all that. It's the band.
Right.
It's all about the band.
Somebody's getting in trouble over there. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, you
hear the screaming?
I sort of heard something. I heard a little something come through.
I imagine she's watching some kind of scary YouTube video, which is going to be fun.
That's not good.
Yeah, you'll be awake with her all night.
Yeah. Okay. Watching
Turner and Hooch, the TV show.
Yes. my number four is actually the mouse from Mouse Hunt. Now, I love Mouse Hunt.
Nice.
It is such a great movie. And you know, A World Without String is chaos. I think we've said this before on another episode, Neil, that for me, Nathan Lane and Lee Evans are just like Laurel and Hardy in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very, very dark, but it is so funny. It's on the borderline of being a children's movie to a adult movie, because there's just so many bits in it that are very, very adult leaning, if you like, but it is a great, great film.
Because it's the guy that what's his name? Gore Verbinski.
He's really Pirates of the Caribbean and stuff like that,
and The Ring. Yeah,
and The Ring.
But did you know when you would have had a chance in the West End in London to have seen Nathan Lane and Lee Evans together, because they were the original cast of The Producers on the West End? Yeah,
I didn't know that.
That's go. Awesome.
I didn't know that either.
Was that before or after Mouse Hunt?
That would have been after, yeah. Right. When they brought the producers back to the West End, yeah, Nathan Lane and Lee Evans were the two in it.
Well, there you go.
Any movie that is, I always think of Mouse Hunt as just the movie version of Mousetrap.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
The awesome game. And I was just like, yeah, if you're going to take a game that I love and turn it into a movie, I'm fine with that. Sounds good to me.
I never thought of it like that, but that makes absolute sense, doesn't it? It's like it's a movie version of the game, because that's very good. Well done, Sky. Very good. I'll give you
that's
another ding. I'll give
I'm
you another
a professional.
Ding for that. You are a professional. Jay, you're number three then, please.
Okay, so it's kind of an unusual pick. It's Lady Van Tassel from the 1999 Sleepy Hollow. I think it's Tim Burton directed, played by Miranda Richardson. But this character, I love this movie so much because I loved old school Tim Burton so much. So for me, the idea of this woman manipulating this monster and unleashing it on a whole town, you know, and haunting the town and being this very, very powerful witch. Yes, meeting her and, of course, kind of like tasting her own poison. But at the same time, the way she manipulated the whole scene and people were just second-guessing each other and just kind of like doubt, kind of, it's a very Agatha Christie-like situation when you're like, you're doubting your neighbor, you're doubting yourself, blah, blah, blah. And she's turning each one against each other, and she's the badass mind manipulator behind it. I really liked her. I really liked the way she was so evil, you know, and so vengeful against everybody. So, yeah. And also, I think she was, the whole mood of the movie even elevated her. against, you know, like the Sleepy Hollow, who was played by Christopher Walken. Yeah.
It was, yeah. The Headless Horseman, wasn't it?
Ugh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of my favorite Tim Burton movies, Sleepy Hollow.
It's good fun, isn't it?
It's great fun. Great cast, but it's just so much fun. As a movie, and yeah, I got a soft spot for Miranda Richardson because she was Queen Elizabeth in Blackadder yeah. 2. So I always liked Miranda Richardson, but
and great in movies like The Crying Game and
The one with
Jeremy Irons, Damage. Okay.
I haven't seen it.
I have to watch.
Yeah, she's such a good actress, though. Yeah, she very is. Good. Very
yeah, she good. Is great. That is a good one. I didn't even think about that one, to be perfectly honest.
No, that slipped my mind. Well done.
Go on then, Neil. You're number three.
So it's Nikita from La Femme Nikita and Poulard. The original of these movies. I mean, they remade it with Bridget Fonda called The Assassin, was it? Or Assassin, which was a very poor version of it, but it did have Harvey Keitel in it. It's the start of Luc Besson when he was at his greatest, when he did action sublimely. I mean, this is the French spoken one. He introduces you to Leon, the cleaner, in this movie. I mean, it's where that universe all started. But and Paralad, I'm just going to call her Anne, if you don't mind. She's absolutely brilliant. She obviously went on from there to do more and more stuff and more English spoken stuff. But all of it is just, to me, when Luc Besson was brilliant. I'm not saying he's not good now. He's just a bit of a hack. No, I didn't say that. But his early stuff, from Subway, from Christophe Lambert, right through to, let's say, Joan of Arc, which has its moments. He was, between then, he was untouchable and probably one of the greatest directors around. And this movie in particular, if you haven't seen it, I would say go and see it, because this is where all these assassin movies started. This is the start, to me, of all these American onslaught of all these sort of films, you know, where it goes through, including Leon, which is obviously a masterpiece itself. But this is up there with Leon, if you've never seen it. Have you seen this one, Parv?
I haven't, but if you're saying it's up there with Leon...
Yeah, oh God, yeah.
Because Leon is one of my favourite films... I honestly, one thing, as soon as you said Leon, I thought, how was that not in my top 10 movies of all time that we did for Christmas? Because that is one of my favourite movies of all time.
And I forgot about it myself. Yeah. It does. It's such a great movie. But, you know, like we said, it's a top 10 of that time.
You're right. Top 10
movie, you know, thing easily. But have you ever seen this one, Jay?
I haven't seen La Femme Nikita. I have to.
It's so good. I mean, I'm not saying it's better or it's getting up there with the quality of Leon. You'll see it when you watch it.
Okay.
But you meet Leon in the film. This is where you're introduced to him in this movie.
Not just the actor, but the actual character of Leon.
It's the same actor, same character, but they call him the cleaner. They don't call him anything else but the cleaner.
Okay.
And he's basically the role that Harvey Keitel played in the remake.
Right.
But not that Harvey Keitel did a bad job. It's just the remake is shit.
It's not a good movie. Yeah. Okay. My number three, I'm delving back into TV. And she started off in the series as a bit of a femme fatale. She's softened around the edges a little bit now. This is Rebecca Welton from Ted Lasso.
Okay.
Now, she started off because her goal was to ruin the football club or the soccer club, wherever you are in the world. And then she fell in love with Ted Lasso. She fell in love with the people. She fell in love with the biscuits. And so she's not so much of a femme fatale now, although she is still very strong, very single purposed, very what she wants is what she gets or what she tries to get. You know, she has her weak moments. She has her weaknesses, which I think all femme fatales have as well.
Yeah.
And she's also gorgeous as well. I mean, what more do you want? She's sort of like the full package.
A bloody hell, she can sing.
Well, she can sing as well. Again, the full package. She has good the full voice. Package. Yeah. So for me, the femme fatale bit, I think, comes in the first few episodes of season one,
where she has that evil streak. She's there for one reason, and it's to ruin her ex-husband's baby, which is this football club. Then she mellows, because that's what Ted Lasso does to people. He mellows people, makes them fall in love with him and his way of thinking. So, but yeah, I think just as a strong person, she is somebody that can be looked on as somebody that you would want to be, I think. Now, I don't know, Jay, are you a fan of Ted Lasso? Have you ever seen it?
Very. I love it.
Yeah.
I love that you picked her as a fun fatale. Like, for me, some of the characters picked are like, okay, I love these people. I don't see them as fun fatale. For me, fun fatale is like ruthless, you know, like on steroids, you know, she's out there to kill everybody, at least, you know, like for her own agenda, for her own moral code. But yeah, for me, some of the pics are just interesting because they're like, wow, I consider them heroes and good people, actually. So
that's like, I mean, you're wow. Absolutely right, because she is that now. But when she started, the only reason that she took over that football club and was chairman and owner of it was because she wanted to destroy it. And that was her sole aim. The only reason she was there, the only reason she chose an American coach to come and coach this football team, was because she knew that it would mean that they would get relegated. It would ruin the club would go under, and it was no reason of love. It was just total destruction. That was her main aim. So that was the reason that I thought of her as a femme fatale, because it doesn't matter who's in front of her. She is going to plow through them to destroy this thing that her ex-husband loved. And that is what I thought is how fantastic now that she is one completely 180 degrees changed. You know, she loves everything about it. She loves everybody that is part of her family, if you like. So yeah, a bit of a difference, but there you go. That's what I've gone for. Donna, back to you for your number two.
I'm torn about my number two because I'm almost thinking I should make it my number one.
Decisions.
Watch me do a quick swap here. Oh my God. I just can't. I don't know. I can't. All right. So my number two, which could be my number one, is Matthew McFadden.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Darcy. When I saw Matthew McFadden portray Mr. Darcy, you know, after they'd had that big scene where she's like, you know, from the first moment I met you, your arrogance and conceit and your constant disdain for the feelings of others made me realize you're the last man in the world I could ever be prevailed upon to marry. And he was like, so he went from being this prideful, arrogant, rich boy to this crushed man in love. And then at the end, it breaks down to him telling her he loves her, but he's like, I love you. And I mean, my heart stopped. I think every woman in anywhere that had seen that performance thought there's no better actor than that in that moment. You're just so won over. And he's, you know, he's not always played pretty boy parts. I mean, he's done Spooks and he's done Ripper Street and he's done Death at a Funeral. And and now he's playing in America. He's playing Tom Wamsgam in Succession.
Succession, yeah.
Which is a very unlikable character. Very unlikable.
Is there any likable characters in Succession? I don't think there is there?
You know, we're riveted by this last season, absolutely, the final season. I know that people think there are no likable characters. Tom and Greg together are the greatest couple you will ever meet. Tom and cousin Greg and their weird, psychosexual, platonic, buddy-buddy, like, banter, back and forth relationship I can't tear my eyes away from them. They're hilarious and despicable, and you want to hate them, but you can't, because kind of like you were talking about Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, you're like, he's so likable. He's a villain and he's so likable, and he's just wonderful. I mean, he can do anything. I saw him reading a Shakespeare sonnet in a cafe drinking coffee, and his voice, the the undulations of his voice. It's so beautiful. And he's got that same kind of gravitas, I think, that Russell Crowe has. So I put him as my number two, though he could have been my number one. Wow. In my heart, he's my number one.
Okay.
And who's he married to? Is somebody famous?
Keely Hawes.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
I know. She's the luckiest woman, and he's the luckiest man. They're so adorable together. That's, you know, that's acting royalty right there.
Yeah. I don't know if either of you guys have seen Quiz. Did you see Quiz where he plays Charles Ingram?
With, oh, I was thinking of the Robert Redford movie.
No.
Quiz show.
No. Yeah. Oh, God.
Same kind of thing, though. The cheating scandal for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
That's right. It. Yeah. Mm-hmm. With, was it who played Chris Tarrant? I forgot his name.
Michael Sheen.
Yes.
He was fantastic as Chris Tarrant. Yeah, that was incredible. Yeah. Okay, so Neil, you said Daniel Day-Lewis for number two. My number two was Tom Hanks. So, Leon, what is your number one U2 song?
So, my number one, it's very hard to get to this, but I've had to base it on what we talked about earlier on. My number one U2 song is Where the Streets Have No Name. It made it to the number one spot purely for what we talked about earlier on, is the Sun Devil Stadium live section of Rattlingham and that red backdrop with the strobe lights. I remember seeing that and having my, you know, my heart, my mouth, and, you know, just being gobsmacked by, like you say, it's an incredible moment in the movie. But then whenever I hear that song, I remember seeing it, you know, whatever it was, 6 months later. I think, in fact, it was less than that. It was December when I went to see them. I think the movie came out in about September, October, something like that. So it was only... actually, the movie came out in 88, didn't it? The tour was 89. So, sorry. It was a year later. I was actually stood there in Paris, and it was exactly the same. All, you know, there's all the bustle. You've had the first band on, and then all of a sudden the lights go down, and the red backdrop comes in, and that music comes in, and everyone went nuts.
Mm.
And then you just see the silhouette. You see the silhouette, and then the strobe comes in, and there's the Edge doing the part exactly the same as the movie.
Yeah.
And then the moment for me was, there he was walking through, you know, with cowboy hat on, and up to the crowd.
Did the lights of the stadium all come up on that?
Yeah.
That bit.
Yeah. So he walks in. So the Edge, the strobe's there, the red background, and he's seeing him playing the part, and the others are tinkering away in the background, almost in darkness. And then you just see Bono's silhouette come out. He puts his hand up. And then as it comes out, yeah, and then as we hit that last little bit, the whole place just...
Yeah.
And that was it, they were gone.
Man.
And it was one of the, you know, remembering it was one of the, especially at 16, it was one of the greatest, but I could have died then and been happy, you know what I mean? It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And that's why that went to number one. That was my number one. Because it reminds me of that moment. And it's a great song.
It is well a great done. Song.
Right then, so Neil, what is your number one U2 song? So
this could have easily been Leon's number one. It's Bad. Yeah, it's Bad. First hearing it on Unforgettable Fire, I had it on cassette, not vinyl, back in the day when I first bought it. It was the standout song back then, and it's followed me ever since. It goes on every playlist I ever have, for my car, for my house, whatever playlist it's on there. And to me, it's by far their best song. I don't know. I just... love it. I think it's a fantastic song, and it's been interesting to find out what it was about from Leon because
I would not say don't quote me on how accurate I am, but I'm pretty sure that's along the lines. I only read that chapter of the book about a month ago, so I should still remember. But
yeah, at our age, Leon, it's one of those things.
There you go. I thought Desire was going to be your number one.
It kept going really in and out of my top ten.
It didn't even make your top ten.
Well, it did last week. It's an ever-evolving list. It's one of these ones that we say, you know, it's like the best movies and all of this. It's for my limited knowledge of U2, I mean, I feel I like them and I know enough about them. I still struggled to get 10 because it kept evolving.
Yeah. Okay, so my number one is one, because I think it is one of the greatest songs ever written.
without a shadow of a doubt. And I think it's the simplicity. I think I had the CD single of it, I think.
Yeah.
And I've said a million times, this song and The Master Plan by Oasis will be played at my funeral. These are my funeral songs. And I think a song has to be special to be played at a funeral, at your own funeral. There is just something simplicity about it, but the words, the melody, the strings in it just makes it one of the greatest.
It could have been, it's another one that could have been on my alternate universe top 10. That would have been on it. I think that's the way I've got to look at it. I could have had, there were ones that you guys have both gone tonight. I've gone, yeah, that'd have been my alternative top 10.
Yeah.
The thing is, if we do this 6 months' time, your top 10 would probably be completely different. Like Neil said, it depends on how you're feeling at that particular time. What songs you know, it's just how it is with some of these artists.
There were some other ones that actually, other suggestions are the ones that nearly made the cut. Ones that I was quite partial to off of was Elevation. I like Elevation.
Yeah.
Was that one used in Tomb Raider?
Yes, it was. Also, another movie one, I'm going to get the title right. Hold Me, Kill Me, Kiss Me. No, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me.
Yeah, from Batman Forever.
I listened to that this morning. I forgot what a great song that is, and it's a really great. I just love the chords in it. It's great. That's a good tune.
Yeah.
There are too many. I mean, Joshua Tree, you could pick through, and Rattlingham, you could pick through. I mean, there's beautiful songs on Rattlingham, like Heartlands, and it's a beautiful song, man. But if I go back, I mean, the War album. There's Two Hearts Beat as One, which Bono wrote for his wife. Great track. 40 is a wonderful little tune. There are just too many to, you know. And then you get more obscure with some of the, again, I mentioned one earlier on, which is a B-side of, I don't know if you'd be able to find it actually on there, on your box of tricks. There's one called The Three Sunrises.
Let's have a look, shall we?
If you can find The Three Sunrises while we're on here, that's right, we're nearing the end.
And what's the reason for that one? The Three
Sunrises? It's one of my favourites. I heard it on the making of the Unforgettable Fire album, and then I found it when I eventually started collecting the singles. I found it as a B-side. Now, if you listen to the little guitar riff, this is... As I was saying, it sounds like it comes from Sweetest Thing. You hit that. Yeah, you're kind of at the end of it now, but the little...
Yeah.
Can you hear that, the Sweetest Thing?
Yeah.
It's a similar sound, that little doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah.
It's a great little tune, but if you watch the... I think I remember it more because I remember watching the live bit and they're all just messing around in the studio when he's recording it. But that's one of the outtake stroke B-sides from that album.
Great one. Great one.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.